jobs.
You know what? Yeah, I guess I do. It's a weakness I have.
Apparently.
Absolutely. So, hold on a second. We're live. We are live, and hello, everybody. Danny, how's it going?
It's going. Everyone has to tell me how much they like my hair because I had a panic attack about it. So,
That's why I have the hat on. Thank you very much. Oh no, what are you
brought the hat.
drinking, Danny?
Some shard that
Okay.
I experienced a really awesome parenting moment. I have a 21-year-old child. Well, technically, I have two 21-year-old children, but one is here. So I was like, hey, I'm busy. Here's my card. And he said, no, I'll get it for you. He
Oh,
bought
wow.
me Chardonnay. And I
Very
didn't have to go
nice.
get it. He just went and got it. Thank you,
Very
Patrick.
nice. Yeah. We were just Dan Matson and I were just talking about parenthood before we started rolling. Absolutely. So let's say hello to some of the folks in the chat. We got Andrew. Howdy,
Andrew.
Andrew. We got Ubaldo. Thank you very much for
Ubaldo.
stopping by. Skywalker's Academy. Here,
Oh.
I'm gonna put this one up because it's got all of our names. Woo-hoo. And this
Not
was before this right before you showed up. But rest assured, there you are.
Just
But
FYI, Ro originally sent me the wrong link. So.
I think I did. Yeah. So Patrick, hello, Patrick. We
Hey,
have a Star
Patrick.
Trek actor in the house.
Hey,
Woo-hoo.
Dave.
What is going on? And our friends, some more Red Five Network peeps. What's up,
What's up,
Scarif? And how
other
is everyone in the
Andrew?
chat? The science fictionary. This is Andrew number one. And
Oh,
as we acquire more Andrews, they will come into the ranking. So
he is Andrew Prime.
Andrew Prime, used and abused is in the house. Is it live or is it Memorex?
What's
It is
up?
absolutely live. But we have a wonderful hangout. I want to say it's an exclusive hangout with Dan Madsen and Kyle Newman. They're going to come on in a few minutes. They're going to talk to us about. They're going to share some secret sauce, some secret stuff about maybe some projects that we might be able to check out in the near future. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And obviously, next month is a wonderful anniversary. We are going to be enjoying, at least on this show, we're going to be enjoying four episodes. We're going to be talking about the 25th anniversary of Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, as you see by my hat here. And a quarter of a century. Does that make you feel old?
Yes, I forgot to turn him on. It does. I'm gonna have to turn the motor
Yes.
off though. I was pregnant with my first son when I went to see Phantom Menace, so that also reminds me that I have a 25-year-old child.
Wow. 25
So.
years. And I actually episode one has a wonderful place in my heart. I live in Chicago, as everybody knows. I went to Los Angeles to see it. I like to travel to like the suburbs to a nice theater. Well, this time I flew to a nice theater. I hung out with the rest of the fans at Grauman's Chinese Theater for 2 nights, and it was an amazing experience. So that is always the crowning jewel of some of my fandom experience. Obviously, 2016 was or 2019 was another one. Star Wars Celebration came to Chicago. We had a lot of fun. That's when we started the podcast. So, Star Wars Episode One, we're going to be talking about that tonight as well. But just a reminder that it is celebrating 25 years of Star Wars goodness. So it is amazing. Danny, before we start, you got anything else to say before we push some buttons and bring our guests on?
Well, I want to say thank you to everyone. Pardon me. I had knee surgery last week, and I have gotten so many messages from followers, subscribers, friends.
Sure.
It's been really awesome. You guys made me feel super, super loved. So thank you. Thank you for that a
Oh.
whole lot.
Oh, that's so nice. All right, excellent. Without further ado, let's push some buttons. Let's refill our drinks. Remember to tip generously. Just have it handy. I wish you can choose, though. Yeah.
This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Guys, it is Saturday, and welcome to the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast. I am Ro, your friendly neighborhood Scuttlebuddy. And we got Dan Mattson and Kyle Newman back again for another show. Yay. Gentlemen, thank you so much for hanging out with us. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Kyle, how's it going?
Everything's going well. It's a rainy Saturday in Los Angeles.
Oh, no.
You'd expect. No, you wouldn't expect. But yeah, no. It seems like every time the weekend rolls in, it's rain.
Dude, oh, wow. I've been to LA once. I went last year to visit my friend, and the entire week I was there, it was monsoon season. And I was like,
was it like February, January, February?
Yes. Kind of? Yes. Oh,
wow. Yeah. And don't what's crazy during those months.
Yeah. No, we won't do that again. And what's crazy is before that I was in Florida and it rained the entire time there. And then when I was home in Missouri right before I left, it rained for like 2 or 3 weeks. So I lived in nothing but rain for about 2 months. And when I got home, it was raining again.
Yeah. No, we had a wonderful sunny day today here in Chicago. But
same here in Denver, blue yes. sky, sun, 70 degrees,
beautiful in Missouri.
Yeah. Very nice.
We've covered everything but the East Coast right here. This is great.
Excellent. Guys, thank you very much for, come on by. Before I had, run the intro, we were talking about Star Wars Episode One, and I wanted to get everybody's take. A quarter of a century, it does sound kind of frightening when you say it like that, but 25 years. And Danny and I have discussed how we get a little ticked off when we post online and say, where were you in 1999? And people on the internet are like, I wasn't even born yet. I'm like, oh my God, that really makes you feel old. Dan, you have a special connection, obviously, to Star Wars Episode One and Star Wars in general, but tell us a little bit about how you feel coming up to this 25th anniversary.
I feel old. I feel really old. You know, I mean, it's 25 years ago when the movie came out, and it was 26, 27 years ago that I actually was on the set of Episode One at Leavesden Studios. Basically, I'd gone over there to cover the whole production for the Star Wars Insider magazine. And lo and behold, before I went over, they offered me a cameo in the movie. So I got over there and filmed, you know, got my costume all made for me and everything. And then spent 2 weeks shooting on the back lot and interviewing everybody for the movie. And so that it was even longer ago for that situation. So it feels strange. Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long already.
I know when you do the math, you can't believe it. I mean, I mentioned how I was in Los Angeles at the Grauman's Chinese Theater. I still remember it like it was yesterday, but it's those types of memories, especially as a fan, that, you know, kind of stay in your mind for a long time. I think even those of us with a little more gray in our beard that remember being in that seat in that theater in 1977, watching the original one.
I wasn't born yet for that one.
Yeah, shut up. But it's wonderful. I mean, these movies, you know, hold a special place in our heart, obviously. But Kyle, what do you remember about the hype leading up to Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace? And spoiler, did you figure out who the Phantom Menace was?
You're muted, Kyle.
You're muted.
Oh, which one? The multi-meaning title. I think the title's brilliant. I think it encapsulates exactly what George was trying to do. I think it put everybody back. It should have put everybody back in the right frame of mind about what kind of movie we were about to get. But I think everyone expected Star Wars to grow up and evolve with them. You know, so many people changed them as children. And I was ready for the movie. I couldn't wait for the movie. So I read the novel before I saw the movie. Mm. So when I saw the movie, I loved it. I saw it 7 times in 28 hours.
Oh, my God.
A lot of people have issues with Phantom Menace because they can't look at it outside of the context of themselves. It's like a movie they imagined in their head for 25 years. How many years it was. They directed it. They played with the toys. They thought of a film and a saga that was going to be different, inherently different, and drastically different than what George gave us, you know? And it was surprising. You know, there's still so many elements to it that it's one of those movies I've seen it since probably like 100 times. I get something out of it every time I watch it. It's much deeper than people give it credit for. I think it's a pretty bold movie. It has a lot of imperfections. Not going to lie about that, but I can see past them. There's a certain charm to it. So I'm excited. I'm going to the reopening night. I've seen it in 3D, and it's one of the top ones just because what it means, you know. It was that's feeling of seeing it. There's never been hype like that before for a movie, and I don't think there ever will be, considering there are pre-sales and you can pick your seat and you can order your food to your seat. And it's just, it's different. Movies are different. Yeah. There'll never be anything like it.
They're absolutely not the events that they used to be.
And right. That's a shame. And that really is a shame. You know, I talked to younger people and I said, you know, you actually had to wait in line to go get a ticket. There was no, you know, internet where you log in and get your ticket or pick your seat even.
You had to lay your coats down and be like, yeah. Someone's sitting here.
Yeah, someone's sitting here. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Kyle, you're absolutely right about the hype. I don't think there will be the type of hype that episode one enjoyed. I mean, even the hype for The Force Awakens after a long period of no Star Wars and George announcing that there will be another set of movies. But the hype was there, but I don't think it was as strong as it was for episode one back then. Yeah. I mean,
I agree.
People were going into movies that had nothing to do with episode one just to see the trailers.
Yep.
Meet Joe Black.
I remember buying my ticket for that. Yeah. So that's amazing. Dan, I wanted to ask you, because Kyle mentioned something regarding fan expectations for us. He mentioned the fact that we directed a certain aspect of films after Return of the Jedi. We wanted to, we knew what we wanted to see, or at least we kind of had an idea. How do you place fan expectations with especially the prequels? I'm not going to get into the sequels, but the fan expectations for the prequels and how we had these films already filmed in our heads, and maybe, you know, folks thinking that maybe there were something else.
Well, that's great. And, you know, I think Kyle said it very well. I mean, you know, everybody had already imagined what this movie was going to be like. So, you know, when they got in there and it wasn't quite what they had expected, it certainly, you know, there was a lot of fans disappointed. There's a lot of fans upset, but there's a lot of fans that loved it too. And the critics, you know, trashed it. I mean, they didn't like it at all. It was painful to watch. I mean, I had taken over running the official Lucasfilm fan club in 1987. And during that time I had covered, there was no Star Wars. So I had covered Indiana Jones and Willow and such. And then one time I got a call from Lucasfilm. They said, George is finally getting started on the prequels. And so I was privileged. I got to go out to Skywalker Ranch. I got to read the script before the movie ever came out. I was on the set, got to do all of that, see the movie and see, you know, probably 15 minutes of the movie. And so I was really excited. But, you know, running the official Star Wars fan club at this time, and I've often said this, there was no better time to be a Star Wars fan than that time coming right up to episode one. Everybody was so excited. They were so hungry. The anticipation for a new Star Wars movie was just absolutely rabid. And running the official Star Wars fan club, we had not only the fan club, but the official magazine, the Star Wars Insider. And then we were doing the official Star Wars store on StarWars.com. So we really, Denver, where my company was based, we really had, you know, we were Star Wars Central at that point. And then we ran Celebration One here in Denver in 1999. So, and 2 weeks before the movie opened. So it was, I'd never experienced anything like it, Ro and Danny. It was just, the excitement and the anticipation was, you could just feel it. It was intense.
Yeah.
Those absolutely. Were halcyon days. I would they say that moment in time.
Yep. You're right, Kyle. Absolutely right.
The time between special editions and when those movies came out was like nothing else for any fandom ever. And it cannot be emulated because, you can name a franchise that's even out there where you think it could go away for 15, 18 years and come back with that type of resurgent potency. Star Wars almost became a cult film, but then George cleverly let it drift off, and then special editions, it cultivated something in the air in this fandom. And then suddenly it was like, when those movies came, it was like the second coming. It was crazy. It's just, and with that much hype means that there are going to be those detractors, there are going to be those haters, and it's not a movie for everyone. And I do miss Star Wars. That is, I think there's a lot of people that yearn for it now, considering where things are at with Disney and Lucasfilm, that they want big ideas, big myths, the Chosen One, the Son of Sons, Herculean type myths, virgin births. It's like big stuff. And it just feels like episodic, small, safe, MacGuffin-y, just keep passing the baton. There's no big swings. No. It doesn't have balls. I don't know what to say. It's just, it's good. It's fine. But it's not like George took risks.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the other thing. And I mean, this is the guy who made THX, American Graffiti, and Star Wars. And they're like three of the greatest American films.
Yeah.
Ever made. And there's people that are out there making fun of George Lucas, criticizing him. Maybe you don't get how brilliant he is. You know, that's the other way to look at it is, you know, Matrix contaminated it. Everyone thought, you know, Luke Skywalker or Anakin was going to drift backwards, and we all expected it to adopt like a certain modern style. George is not going to mess with that. He's go screw yourself. He's going to make his movie, you know? So.
Yeah. He's a genius. And in cinema, filmmakers have been trying to recapture that ever since, or trying to duplicate it ever since. You're right. There's never been a moment like the buildup to episode one. And ever since, you know, we see it with Marvel, even with Star Trek, they're trying to recreate that, but it's already been done.
Yeah. There was no Avatar Con in Denver.
No.
Last time I checked.
No.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
That's not happening. Yeah. No one's going to Hunger Game Con.
Sure.
No one's going to Dune Con. Like, they might, but it's not like Celebration.
I would go to
it's
Dune
not,
Con.
It's
I'm
not
just
like,
saying.
It's cool, but it's not at the level.
No, absolutely not. It's kind of like, you know, there's only one Beatles.
Yeah. Sure.
There's only one Star Wars.
When Michael Jordan.
That's what's a little sadness is because Star Wars, it isn't living up to that right now. You go see Dune, and some of the new Star Wars feels like Power Rangers compared to Dune too. You know, you're like, you're yearning for Star Wars to get back on the horse again and be like, no, we're the top, you know, and ride off. And
they have come right out to say they're going to stop taking risks. Like, wait, you've been taking risks?
Right.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It is, you know, and I call that secret element, I call that the Lucasian element, that Lucasian touch. I think George Lucas really had a kind of a connection to what makes something like that work. And obviously his background in his the anthropology and his interest in the mythology of everything. I think that's what makes, you know, besides the laser swords and spaceships, I think the connection, it is that primordial spiritual connection that we have with the universe. Not to get overly dramatic, but I think that's a big part of why Star Wars works the way it works.
The mysticism, the spirituality, sure. that's my favorite part of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about this before, where I'm like, I really wish they would delve deeper into that, like just dive right in, because it's never really been deeply explored. It has in the books and in the legacy stuff. I mean, crack a book on the Mandalorian history. My gosh,
right?
That's some amazing detailed stuff. You forget that it's fiction. You forget that it's space stuff.
Right. It's so set up. Yeah. Kyle, I'm going to ask you a question.
George did bring some quirkiness to it. Sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I agree with you. The myth and the religion, that was something special. His adoration for samurai films and westerns and all that. But he did bring it was a flippant quirkiness. You know, you look at the Terry character, like crashing his moped in American Graffiti. There's goofy, weird stuff that he does. And I don't think other people are in sync with that. They take it either way too seriously, or they don't take the time to... I think people think they know what Star Wars is. You know, when someone does when Billy Dee Williams goes on a talk show and he does Billy Dee Williams, you know, he even forgets what Lando was. He does a parody, you know, and there's a lot of people forget, go back to the source and really study what it was, you know, and then you're going to get to the essence of what made it, what George's storytelling was, then move forward. Right now, we're making a copy of a copy of a copy.
Yes.
Sure.
You know, and we got to go back.
Watered down. Yeah.
Yes. Have you guys heard the Freddie Prinze Jr. rant where he's talking about Star Wars is for kids. There's no such thing as gray Jedi. I've talked to George Lucas myself, and Star Wars is for kids, and you guys need to grow up. And I just wanted to be like, how are you in Star Wars? And you just don't seem to get it at all.
Kyle, I was going to mention the American Graffiti thing that you mentioned. I read somewhere that was an error, and then the actor kind of stopped after the fact, and then since nobody said cut, he just kept going, and then George left it in there.
Yeah, I mean that's
a good thing when he sees it.
That's the documentarian aspect of George.
Yes, you know, yes, absolutely.
He's there to set something up, explore, and capture it. He's not a heavy manipulator. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know him that well, but I would say
until he gets into the edit room
from him.
I was going to say he's not a heavy manipulator until he gets into the editing room.
And even that's true. Really wonderful people, though. I did get to meet Paul Hirsch recently, who's the Oscar winning editor of Star Wars, and you know, he's brilliant on Empire. He's done so many movies, and you know, it's they let people like that have freedom. George got people he trusted, and he could conversationally bring out the best in these people. And you see that when he goes around the room and he stamps art or he doesn't, and he sees instantly whether something works or not.
I think we missed that stamp.
Different. Yeah.
I think we missed that stamp of approval when he would go around and said, yes, this is good. You know, reject this one. I think I particularly miss that aspect of George's filtering process, because you know, I look at some of the stuff now, I'm like, yeah, I don't think that would have passed. It's all interesting. You know,
a lot of fans say they would love to have George come back and then direct another one, but I think he's done. He has no desire to come back and do another one now.
I see him on Rush Street all the time, just hanging around. On Rush Street near Chicago Avenue, just hanging around other people's documentaries.
Whatever. That's something Ro and I have talked about a lot, that when George sold to Disney, that was his retirement plan.
Yep.
He was done. And I'm sure he's pretty depressed over what they did with his treatments that they bought.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know what? I'm retired. And from what I hear from people that do work for Lucasfilm now, that's the case. Sometimes Filoni will actually get frustrated that he can't get George to help with anything. He's like, well, he's retired. He's old. Let him be old and a grandpa.
He was going to do some experimental films. I don't think he.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Or maybe he did. He
said his heart, do his them, heart is in his art museum in LA now. That's where he's spending a lot of his concentration.
Yeah. And his grandbabies. You know,
absolutely. But yeah, that's his baby.
And he does have now. He has a young child too.
Yeah, he has a young son.
Oh yeah, he loves kids.
Every time I pass by that site, I curse the friends of the park that stopped the George Lucas Museum from coming here to Chicago.
I know.
What a stupid travesty that was.
They blocked it in San Francisco too, correct?
Yeah. Do they not realize how many nerds live in the Midwest? All of them.
Yeah.
I know.
I think they misconstrued what the purpose of the museum is. Like narrative arts, it's not a film museum. It's looking at illustrative storytelling, and you're talking about like Maxfield Parrish and Rockwell, and there's just this, the stuff he collects is pretty impressive, and he's just a smart, tasteful guy. It's really a study of an American art form. You know, it's much more than what people think that it is going to be.
It's culture. It's American culture.
It is. Sure. And George is such an art fanatic. I mean, you know, when you visit his office, there's Maxfield Parrish originals and Norman Rockwell originals, and there's all kinds of amazing art that he absolutely loves and adores. And it makes complete sense for him to be launching this museum.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, you mentioned Star Wars Celebration 1, and I heard it was a little soggy.
Not a little, a lot. No. You know, when we were planning that, you know, they came to us less than a year before we actually did it. And they said, you know, we'd love to do a convention. We think the fan club should be the ones that organize it. And I said, well, we were already thinking that ourselves. So we sat at Skywalker Ranch and went over and over where it should be. We went from New York, LA, Chicago, and then we came upon Denver, which is where I am. And I said, you know, I have over 100 employees and I have a whole group of volunteers here. And I said, you know, we can make this happen here in Denver, and it's kind of centrally located. So we did. We decided to do it here in Denver. By the time we were able to really get it confirmed, the Colorado Convention Center was already booked. Mm. We couldn't get it in there. So we found the Wings Over the Rockies Air and Space Museum, which was a huge hangar, ex-hangar of the Air Force, all kinds of neat, cool fighter jets and things in there. And they liked the idea of combining the future with, you know, a fantasy with reality and such. And so we knew we were going to have to build a couple of big tents, circus-like tents outside to do the main stages on. And, you know, as we were getting closer and closer, I kept seeing the weather forecast. I had no idea, though, that on that weekend, we would have the worst rain in 100 years. And it was, I mean, it just solid Friday and Saturday, just solid nonstop rain all day, all night. And, you know, the fans, they were such troopers. I mean, they stuck through it. And Anthony Daniels would go out when they're standing in line to get on the main stage with an umbrella, and he'd go down the whole line talking to everybody and shaking their hands and thanking them for, you know, waiting in the rain to get into the main arena. And
wonderful.
He is such an amazing guy to work with. And he came out 2 weeks before the event and spent that time helping me get the whole thing developed. And he came to my office, and we had about 50 people working the phones at that time, taking orders for Star Wars and Star Trek. And Anthony was so funny, because he would occasionally, with the Star Wars call, he would ask the person to get out of the chair, and he'd get on there and he'd take the person's order. And after he got there, he says, "Do you know who this is?" And they're like, "No." And he goes, "Well, this is Anthony Daniels." He said, "I noticed."
How can you not know that voice?
I said, "I noticed you didn't order any C-3PO items." And then he'd have a whole conversation with them. You know, it was cool that the kind of stuff he would do. But it was every morning I'd get up and I'd look out the window and I'd be like, "Oh dear God, it's solid rain," you know. But you know, the one thing about that is that. And I'm sorry about the sun coming in, guys. I don't know what to do about that at the moment.
We can just see you better.
There you go. After, when I was backstage, Rick McCallum, who was the producer of the prequels, I was sitting there just shaking my head, and I said, "Oh my God, Rick," I said, I can't believe that the one weekend we're doing this, that there's this kind of rain." And he said, "Dan, let me tell you something." He said, "Years from now, people will look back at this as their Star Wars Woodstock. They'll remember standing in the mud and the rain to go to the very first Star Wars celebration." And I said, "Man, I hope you're right." And you know what? It's taken 25 years or whatever, but there's a lot of people now who look back at that first celebration with fondness and say, you know, it built camaraderie. We're all there together. It was the very first one. You know, there wasn't Star Wars conventions all over the country like Star Trek. And it was in that buildup time we were all talking about. Mm-hmm. This was like at the peak. 2 weeks before the movie opened, they get to come to Denver for 3 days. They get to see footage, original footage from the new movies that nobody had ever seen. They got to meet all of the actors from episode one on the stage. It was the first place to buy the new Kenner Star Wars episode one action figures. It was a Star Wars Nirvana, and a lot of people remember it as that. So, you know, it's gotten a lot better over the years. Sure. People forget the rain and the mud and just what a good time they had.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is Rick McCallum up to these days? I don't see his name as much anymore.
I have not spoken to him in so many years, but I know he was at a convention in Paris. He was talking about working on episode one. And I think, you know, I think he's semi-retired. He is working on some other productions. I don't know what they are right off the top of my head, but he still is active in some respect in the film industry, but I haven't talked to him in years.
He had a television series a year or two ago. I think he produced something he was involved in. I knew somebody else that got involved. I found out recently, like Rick was the original producer on the show.
I didn't know that.
It's shot in Europe. Cool. Yeah. So I did feel like he did some interesting comments recently too. I read somewhere he took offense to the fact that people said he was like a yes man, him and some of the other people. I got the sense, I met Rick a few times. He was a great guy. And you could tell he was vocal. He's not a pushover. He's a strong will guy. You could tell he was saying, "George, I don't know about this. Or are you sure you want to do that? Or I wouldn't do that." George is going to do what George is going to do. I wouldn't say that anybody's a yes man. If George is writing the check of $110 million, George is going to do whatever the hell George wants to do, for better or for worse. And he's there to facilitate as a friend and producer. So I always thought he got unfairly maligned in terms of, you know, what I agree, Kyle.
He
pulled up a pretty experimental movie. There's been nothing like it in terms of scale and an independent movie. And he produced it, you know, and,
he also produced the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles for George before that. So that was where I met him, was for the TV series. And then, so it was kind of, it was a nice surprise when I found out he was going to be the new producer on the prequel. I mean, you know, I used to interview him every issue of The Insider moving up to episode one, and he'd give us the updates on what was going on. And I can tell you, Kyle, there were many things I could not print. He had a mind of his own. And I mean, he'd lay it out and he'd say, tell me things. And I'd be like, "But don't print that." I'm like, "Okay, I've got it all on tape. Someday I had to release them." And you wouldn't believe some of the things.
I want to hear the McCallum tapes.
Well, you call us first, Dan.
All right. I will.
You do that.
There were some very intriguing things that he had to share.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. I always feel like that series was kind of a training ground for not only him and the rest of the crew, but ILM to be able to kind of bring Star Wars visuals to the small screen. And obviously, you know, they did and then some. You know, getting into, and I love technology. I love what George Lucas and Industrial Light and Magic offered the rest of the world, other filmmakers, the tools to be able to tell these stories. And I remember an interview with George Lucas, pre-1999, where somebody asked him about if he's going to come back and make more movies. And he says, not yet. And at the time, you know, special effects was at its peak. And I remember George saying, the special effects are not up to par with the stories that I want to tell. And my mind was blown. I was like, what the hell are you going to, what are we going to see? I love the technology aspect of George Lucas. I think, we were talking about all those behind the scenes documentaries that are on my list now. Those are the things that as a young kid inspired me to become a photographer, to become a cameraman, to become an editor. And I think I absorbed so much of those behind the scenes documentaries, especially from ILM. The wonderful one that was just recently put out there on Disney Plus. I'm very pleasantly surprised that they did brand new interviews with everybody involved coming up from, the early 70s and how Star Wars kind of got put together. It's for me as a kid growing up in the 70s, being able to absorb all that information and really get my feet wet. I grabbed my own camera. I did my own stop motion. I experimented, and it was such a wonderful thing. I know Star Trek has a lot of aspects like that where they inspire, pilots and scientists and astronauts and all that stuff. And Kyle, your t-shirt says it all. I was going to ask you guys, I'll start with Kyle first. What other IPs are you guys super nerds about?
Me, Dungeons and Dragons, Star Wars, okay. Star Trek, super nerds, big Marvel, old Marvel, Silver Age, Bronze Age, comic book collecting, a lot of that stuff. Super nerds. I'm also a big fan. I don't see the difference a lot of times between the IPs and I'm a big fan of Arsenal soccer team.
You're a non-denominational nerd.
So I find that there's really no difference. You get obsessed, you're passionate, it dominates your day. You can have endless conversations about it when you meet people that are also into it. So there's music. I'm a music fanatic. So I don't know if that counts as movie thing. Totally. I can basically hear a song and tell you what year it's produced. I'm really into that, what other things? Yeah. I'd say it's really comic books, Marvel, Star Wars, Star Trek, Dungeons and Dragons would probably be the bigger things. I love things He-Man, G.I. Joe, vintage G.I. Joe, all that stuff. I'm obsessed. That's great. I don't think the new stuff's as good. It kind of ruins it,
Yeah, and I think Danny said it earlier. It's they're trying to recapture lightning in a bottle, and it's just not working. It's unfortunate, and I get pissed off when sports nerds, because I cover a lot of sports in Chicago, when sports nerds make fun of the sci-fi nerds, like C2E2 is coming in about 2 weeks. And I see all these people dressed up in, as Avengers walking down the street. They've got Spider-Man outfits wherever walking down the street. And then during the Cubs home game opener, I see all these people dressed in blue with the Cubs outfits. I mean, it's the same thing. I'm like, why are we getting our asses kicked?
The same thing here in Denver. I see this thing with the Broncos. I mean, people paint their faces orange. They put on an orange Darth Vader helmet when they're going to the Bronco games. And I've often said to my wife, as we're watching them, I said, these guys are just like the sci-fi fans. I mean, they're just as crazy. They're all in
cosplay.
Cosplay, man.
And Ro, I will thank you not to continue to not use that blasphemous language presence. The C word.
You said lightning in a bottle too. And I think we just keep getting handed a bottle. They're like, look at this. It's Star Wars, right?
It's shiny, right?
What is this guy?
Good point.
Here's another bottle. Oh, we got another. oh, here's another bottle. And they keep forgetting the lightning.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which is the myth and the magic. You know, we keep getting, now it's like procedural sci-fi. It's like, stop. It's fantasy. It's fairy tale. Go back to what it is. Stop mutating it. Stop.
I was looking at...
Kyle just blew my mind.
I was looking at a movie release slate for the next few years, and it's all reboots or sequels to reboots. That's all it is. It's like they've completely run dry. They have nothing new to work with. They're too scared to try anything new. So they just keep recycling the same stories over and over again. And
you're going to get something new soon. Now, I work in Hollywood. The only thing they want now is AAA games. They only want to take games and turn them into movies now. So
they're not movie remakes. There.
They're just big games that have already been, you know, played for 20 years, or they have all this IP and there's all these cutscenes, and they want to turn that, as you see with Fallout this week. They now that's their new thing, is just games. So unless it's like AAA, they don't want to touch it.
Even board game. Didn't I see something about a Monopoly movie?
Yeah. Right. So Margot Robbie, coming off the heels, pun intended, of the Barbie film, she's producing not only a Monopoly film, but also The Sims. Mm-hmm. And I've been playing that stupid game since 1999. And I'm here to tell you that if we don't have Katy Perry singing one of her hits in Simlish, if you play The Sims, that was hilarious.
Yes.
I don't want to move forward and I forget, Dan, regarding other super nerdom, what else are you into?
Well, definitely Star Trek. My career started with Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yay. I started out with Star Trek, did a fan club after the first movie came out, got to become friends with Gene Roddenberry, and he led me to the Paramount licensing people, which led me to become the official Star Trek fan club. And over the years, it just grew and grew and grew. And it was because of Star Trek that Lucasfilm saw what I was doing and said, hey, let's have you do this for us too. So
nice.
Star Trek is definitely, it was my beginning. And I, to be honest, I'm still an original series fan because I grew up with Star Trek. It's very special to me. It really got me on to believing in myself, you know, and the other one, Next Generation, I like, but you know, after that, and the new ones, I'm just not as much. Strange New Worlds is good, and I like that, but you know, it's the others just never have caught my attention. The other one I'm a fan of is X-Files. I love the X-Files.
Yes, I love the X-Files.
Is one of my favorite
shows.
They're
rebooting that too.
And what about Civil War? What about American history?
Yeah, I don't know if people can see now with the sun coming in, but Abraham Lincoln is my big passion now. So I've got a Lincoln stuff all over.
I just watched Civil War last night, and
Yeah, you're talking about the new movie.
I don't know if you want to.
Why is that? Is it not good?
No,
really?
No. It's
I've heard it's incredible. I wonder if it's just
okay.
I'll send you
a
good movie.
I'll send you a link to my review.
I'll watch it and I'll see it. I like Alex Garland as a filmmaker.
I love Alex Garland. And there's just like, why are we at war? Why is any of this happening? And you never know. There's no answers whatsoever.
And I think that was the point.
No emotional attack. You were not given a reason to care about anything that was going on in this film or any of the characters. And that's what really threw me. I'm like, man, Garland is usually really good at this, but it's very empty. Very empty. Interesting. I was very let down.
Is it a parable for like the conflict people have online and just politically, but then transposed into actual conflicts? And that's why, like, sometimes we don't even know why we argue with people. We're just in it. And you're like, we're not that different, you know?
I know some of it is just really like, why did we throw out this 22nd Amendment? Like, I feel like someone would have something to say about that. Yeah. And it just happened.
Okay.
And
it's set in modern day, right? Isn't it set in modern day?
Yes. And yes. Near future kind of thing. Like it's very modern, but listen, I'm from Missouri.
Like October.
Exactly, Kyle.
It kind of shows the Midwest is like, we're just shooting people to shoot people, and we were just looking for an excuse. And then they asked this girl,
have you come to Chicago? Have you come to Chicago?
Okay. You're like Northern Midwest. Right. I'm talking about rural America. So there's this girl who's from Missouri, and they ask her, the Show Me State. Why do they call it the Show Me State? Listen, I'm from Missouri, and it is a knee-jerk reflex reaction that the moment that question comes out, you say, because you got to show me. That's the response. And she goes, I don't know. Well, BS. That's not even true. But no, it has the potential. It had the potential to be a very poignant film and to really say something, but I don't think they know what they wanted to say, or they were too scared to say it. So it just kind of leaves you with, I have two pages of questions. But hey, Waldo saying Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, that's another one. That's another
And the original one. I tried to watch the new one.
You need to try it again.
Hit for me.
Because there's a blonde with a bob, okay?
You know, yeah, I'm the same way, Ro. I mean, I was never into the new one, but I absolutely adored the old one.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when they changed Cylons to blondes, I'm like, I'm out of here.
Listen.
But, you know, the real fast, though. Yeah, I hear. Peabody Awards up the wazoo. I understand. Dan, you know, the original series for Star Trek is kind of like my comfort food, too, because every so often I'll do a rewatch of TOS, and there's just something about, you know, Kirk, Spock, and Bones, that combination of characters, the actors that portrayed those wonderful characters. There's nothing like it. There probably never will be. And I know, you know, we always talk about, you know, actors and chemistry in movies and stuff like that. But when it comes to like Star Trek, I think those three are really the backbone of the stories. And we're, you know, we're never going to get anything like that. It was an interesting time, you know, to live in the 60s. I was born in 69. But I remember watching Star Trek, the original series, and really getting into the sci-fi aspect. You know, when I got older is when I really appreciated the more nuanced story that, that Gene and some of the writers were kind of, you know, talking about, as with any really good star, science fiction, you know, story. It's again, like I said, you know, TOS is my comfort food. I can pop that on any day of the week and then just kind of watch an episode or two.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, it changed my life. The original show, many people may not know this, but I'm a little person. I'm only about 4'2" tall. And, I was walking home from junior high when I was a kid, and there were a couple of kids walking home with me, and they were making fun of me and laughing and calling me shrimp. And it really, you know, upset me. And I started crying, and I got to the front door, and I came in the house, and my brother was watching TV, and I'd never watched Star Trek before. And, I sat down on the couch to watch it with him. And it, lo and behold, I think it was, you know, fate, be honest, the episode Plato's Stepchildren, which had an incredible actor named Michael Dunn, played a character named Alexander. And, he was a little person, and he was being, you know, basically the Plutonians that were on the planet, they had special magical powers based on what they would eat. But because of his dwarfism, it didn't work on him. But at any rate, I'm sitting there with tears still in my eyes, and I'm watching this show, which I'd never seen before. And all of a sudden, you know, I noticed this little guy, and I thought, damn, he even looks like me. Mm-hmm. And there's this one moment in that episode when he looks up at Captain Kirk and he says, what's it like where you come from? And Kirk looks at him and says, Alexander, where I come from, size, shape, or color makes no difference. And I kid you guys not, it's like a light bulb went off on my head. And I'm like, oh my God, wouldn't I love to be in that world? Mm-hmm. And at the end, Alexander gets to beam up to the Enterprise with him. And that moment made me a diehard Star Trek fan. And I never looked back after that. And one of the great joys of my life is I got to interview William Shatner many times, but I went out to LA and I sat down and we were talking and I told him that very story. And he had tears in his eyes. And he says, you know, in his way, he goes, oh, my God, Dan. He goes, I got goosebumps, you know. And so after that, he wrote a book about Star Trek fans called Get a Life. Right. And he devoted an entire chapter to the story that I had, which really, you know, so it's kind of like it all came full circle.
Sure.
Dan, I have to tell you, like when Ro told me you were coming on the show, I got really excited. And I'm going to tell you why.
Sure.
I was born physically disabled myself. I do have a form of dwarfism.
Really?
Yes. It's called proximal femoral focal deficiency. Mine's from like my hips and my femur and stuff. But my legs were very uneven and missing some parts. And now I require a little assembly. I have a prosthetic leg. And I grew up that way. I spent most of my childhood in Shriners Hospital for Children. Wow. And I fell in love with Star Trek for the exact same reasons. I was an inner city kid. I got picked on a lot because I was totally different. No one had seen anyone like me before. And, you know, the kids.
Kids will be kids, you know.
Kids will be kids. And I was born in 80. So the next generation was, I started watching the original series with my dad, but the next generation was really my jam. Yeah. And there's Geordi, who's disabled and he's part of the crew, and not just a part of the crew, he's integral. And his disability was almost like a superpower. He had the visor that had all the different frequencies and stuff he could see. But watching like Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, when they go to Endor, and they had all the Ewoks, and the
little furry teddy bears.
You had Warwick Davis,
being
Wicket, and you feel connected in a way. You feel like you're a part of it. Like, oh, they're like me, and they're doing this stuff. You got to be in episode one, and you got to show other kids like us that you can be in that world. That you look different and these kids may pick on you, but you can play roles and stuff that nobody else can.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's one of the things I get such a joy out of today is watching how far little people have come in the entertainment industry. I mean, Warwick Davis is one of the funniest people I've ever watched and known. But I mean, you got people like Peter Dinklage now, and who gets roles that have nothing to do with his being small. They cast him because he's a great actor.
Yes.
And so he's kind of changed things for little people in a lot of ways. But it's the same thing. And you know what you're saying, Danny, I think, you know, one of the things that also influenced me was, you know, Yoda. Here's Yoda, this little tiny guy who is the most powerful Jedi, and he even says to Luke, you know, judge me by my size, do you? You know, I mean, that was another moment that I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, George made one of the most powerful Jedi, this little tiny guy, shorter than even me, you know? So it's both Star Wars and Star Trek, I think both speak to people who were handicapped or different in some way, and give them hope that, you know, there's a lot more out there than what the world shows you.
I completely agree with you. Yeah. You know, with thanks to comic books, sci-fi, fantasy, I mean, it's so much more than just nerdy stuff that your parents didn't understand. For one, it was an escape. Like if you're living in a children's hospital or having a lot of surgery or in a lot of chronic pain or being picked on, being able to watch these movies or read these books, you can escape that for a minute, escape reality, and live in a place where your disability or difference is actually a benefit. It's beneficial and people love you for it, or just like everyone else around you. It's so much more, and it means so much more to so many people, but I think especially kids who grew up disabled.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is one of the aspects of film, of movies, that I think connects so many people to whatever it is that they're going through. I think people relate to to these stories, whether, you know, whether it's movies, whether it's music, a certain genre, whatever, you know, Kyle was talking about the passion that we all have as fans of anything. But I don't know, something about movies that really touch our soul, because, you know, movies is one medium that really works in so much. You've got sound, you've got music in the movie, you've got the story, you've got the emotion. There, it really encompasses a lot of aspects of who we are. And I think we pick up on it, whether it's subconsciously or not. But I think it's wonderful to be able to connect with movies in a way that changes your life. And obviously Star Wars and Star Trek, two of the biggest IPs out there, you know, have been responsible for doing that for a lot of people. I think it's fantastic. I love hearing all those stories of how people connect with these IPs. I think it's special. And I think, for that reason alone, I hope movie houses don't die. I hope, streaming kind of slows down, but I really, like Danny was saying earlier, I think I miss Star Wars being an event film, like a tentpole, like summer blockbuster type of thing. I hate the fact that that Disney kind of, took Star Wars off of the May calendar and put it down in December. I'm more of a traditionalist. I love the summer blockbuster. I love that aspect of it. I mean, I love it. It's great. But I wanted to, you know, before we wrap up, I want to talk to Dan and Kyle about new projects. What are you guys working on? And what are you guys excited about these days?
Kyle can tell you all about that because he's got, it's first time I have to say before he says that, this is the first time I've been able to get to work with Kyle, and I've been a fan of his for years. Fanboys is one of my favorite movies of all time. And so I've always,
thank you.
I'm being honest. I love Fanboys. And so, you know, the opportunity to get to work with Kyle is one of the great things about this new venture that I'm working with him on. So go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, and every time I would see Dan at an event, it just make me so happy. He's one of my favorite people to chat with. He's infectious, his love for the same stuff. He's been such like a great ambassador for Star Wars and Star Trek, really at the forefront of both as like the first fan. And in so many ways, it's just been great. So I remember reading, you know, Star Wars Insider, reading, you know, the old Lucasfilm magazine, those sad days when they're like, there's going to be no more magazine. George has taken a break. I was like, no. And I just remember Dan from being like this guy that galvanized the fans. And so when I heard that Dan was getting involved in this thing that we were doing, it made me really thrilled because it made so much sense. So what we're doing, a company called Pop Culture Coffee, and Pop Culture Coffee is, first and foremost, it's a great coffee company. It's roasted in the Pacific Northwest. It's organic. It's ethically sourced. Every time it's flavored, it's naturally flavored, and it is just awesome. I mean, it's great. There's a cold brew as well, and so we're targeting fandoms we love: Star Trek, Ninja Turtles, Ghostbusters are the first three that are coming out. But there's more, and we're trying to find those parallels between the fandom, the experience. So it's not just about the movie. There's other dimensions to fandom. With Ninja Turtles, we're trying to really do mashups of flavors, hybrids, mutations, just like they would be. There's all these cool ways to explore it. In Star Trek, there's food. So much of Star Trek, they'll talk about food. They'll drink coffee. They have those elements.
Are you going to make Ractigino?
Yes.
Even in Ghostbusters, you know, you have Stay Puft Marshmallow. I mean, we have a marshmallow flavored coffee, and there's another s'mores one coming, which is cool. There's a lot of fun stuff with it, and there's so many ways to explore it. We launched with a Captain's Choice and a Vulcan Vanilla, but we do have a Ractigino coming and a coffee black, which is tied to Janeway, who's an iconic.
I was gonna say
drinker.
You have to do some like Nebula coffee or something like that for Janeway.
It's coming, and there's a Federation roast coming as well. And let me see, I'll leave it in like here. This is not done and approved, but it's kind of like, you know, there's some cool stuff coming.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Well, if you're looking to sponsor any YouTubers, I will do a full cosplay Klingon commercial for your coffee.
Death chill.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, so we're doing this, and like with Ninja Turtles coming in May, there's going to be they've never really made products for the arcade game, which is legendary, the 4-person stand-up arcade game as a classic. And so we're doing these 16-bit cold brews, which are like feature the sprites and the art from the original game. May is also the 40th anniversary of Ninja Turtles. This year was also the 40th anniversary of Ghostbusters. So it's like a ripe time for fandom. Star Trek, you know, we're getting close on 60 years. And there's so much to mine within, you know, the 13 films and 12 series. It's one of those, you know, evergreen franchises. And like I said, all these characters have different tastes and, you know, attributes. And we're trying to just find those connections. I wrote cookbooks for Dungeons and Dragons. And, you know, we turned the first one into a show. And I love cooking. I love food.
I bought my son a Dungeons and Dragons cookbook for Christmas.
Well, that was a
Heroes Feast. Is it called Heroes Feast?
Yes.
That's my book.
That's Kyle.
Wow. There's a show. You can watch it on Freevee and Plex. I'm going to have to send
it to you and you have to sign it for him.
But I love that. Of course. I love the lifestyle. Like, you like a movie, but what can you do beyond watching the movie? What are the other ways to experience express your love for it? So we want to do hand-spun mugs. We want to get into other merchandise. Like I said, cold brews. We're going to do caffeinated water. There's going to be energy drinks. So you're going to drink this stuff anyway. Why not drink something that's absolutely organic, delicious, high quality? You know, the motto is fuel your passion. So we're just getting started. We launched 3 weeks ago. It's popculturecoffee.com. And
writing it down.
You can go register. You get 10% off your first order right now. There's free shipping after, you know, I think it's $60-something. There'll be a lot of cool things coming. Like I'll say, like with Ninja Turtles, you might get a 4-pack, and that might be the only way to get another character, and you get one of each. Yeah, one character, and it's fun, and that's a mystery flavor. So if you're adventurous, you might go for it. It's different. It's not like ordering Pete's or, you know, Intelligentsia. It's just as good, but there's an element which supports, you know, your fandom.
That's awesome.
I can genuinely say, guys, this is the first time I've ever been excited about a coffee brand.
Cool.
Well, that's good.
What we want. Nice. And they're limited run. So we're doing small batch roasted. It's really well curated. Our roasting partner, you've been doing it since 1991. It's not like some fly by night operation. These people are tremendous, and they can, you know, shape it to exactly what we want, the flavor, the flavor palette, and they're unique, you know, so it's not like it's just not going to be just your standard coffee.
I make my own Klingon ridges and stuff because I'm that kind of nerd. And I do speak a little bit of Klingon. So I tell you what I'm going to do. And my mind is already going like, okay, so I need to get some of the Klingon coffee. And then I need to do just a whole video in Klingon cosplay.
Please do. Coffee.
Speaking Klingon.
We'll have the mug for you too. To drink it out of.
Well, I'm going to need both of those things.
Well, this would be go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say, when Kyle and his partners came to me and we talked about it, I said, two of my favorite things in the world, Star Trek and coffee. It wasn't hard to come on board and join them in this enterprise.
Yeah. Get it?
That wasn't very clever, but what the hell?
Take credit for it. Well, we would love to host Pop Culture Coffee for ScarifCon 5, October 26th in Chicago, our podcast meetup event that we're having. But that would be amazing. That's awesome. We're gonna definitely check it out.
Oh, I would love it if you guys
tell us what you want. ScarifCon.
I want Klingon coffee.
Tell us what kind of coffee. Like, if fans have ideas, send us messages. We're on Instagram. Instagram's official Pop Culture Coffee. And let me see here. And what's the Twitter is Pop Culture Coffee, but without the second E at the end. And just say, you know what, I would love this. And we want to hear what fans want and think. And as we move forward, we're adding a lot of other IPs to the library, to the family. And there's going to be holiday blends. There's going to be all types of cool stuff. And like I said, there's the bags are also unique. The cans are really unique. It's limited edition art. So it's like, once it's gone, it's gone. It's not like you can just,
I'll have it
10,000 bags. These are small, 500 to maybe 1500 max units. So that's it. Yeah. Then there's collectible quality to it. So, it's fun. It's different. The first product was pre-ordered, announced 3 weeks ago. Nothing's even shipped yet. It ships like this week is the first products coming out of the factory.
Wow.
So it's pretty exciting.
How exciting, guys.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It really is.
And who really is, who are you guys using for the, you said the art is unique, custom.
It's different. If you're an artist too, and you want to get in on it, like we're also going to be trying to collaborate with some artists that are fans in the community.
This would make a great coffee label.
Yeah.
So he's a fan, but an artist did an original Slimer. So our Ecto Espresso, which is a nice, if you were in Ecto Cooler when you were a kid, you know, the high C Ecto Cooler, then this is like the adult extension of that. Obviously you're not selling coffee to kids. Like, so this are going for properties that have adult fans or people who've grown up with it. And now they're the adults. We're not doing Rugrats coffee, you know? it's an original Slimer he drew, and it's all really cool. So
that's cool. Very nice. Very cool.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I'd have to buy, you know, two of each because I would have
one to rock, one to stock.
Right. One to rock, one to stock. Too cool. And, you know, maybe a little Red 5 Network coffee. I know we all post our morning coffee mugs every so often, especially on Mondays. We'll get on Twitter and just get a shot of our mugs, holding mugs of coffee and say good morning. But that would be really cool.
Beautiful.
Too funny. Excellent. Before we take off, I want to know what Dan and Kyle's favorite part of Star Wars Episode One: Phantom Menace is besides Dan's appearance. Dan, what about you?
Oh, you ruined it for me. That's what I was going to say. I can say it because it was the first moment you see Darth Maul as those doors open, and he stands there and he puts that lightsaber out, and all of a sudden, you know, it comes from each end.
Yeah.
First time we'd ever seen a double lightsaber. And, you know, I mean, I remember being in the theater and the audience just gasped, you know, when they saw he had blades coming out from each side. I mean, that was a very dramatic moment.
It was a collective, oh, snap.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't think any lightsaber battle has been matched in the intensity and awesomeness episode one.
The music, everything. It was just beautiful.
Yeah. Perfect, perfect. And despite the fact that we were ruined with the soundtrack title that said Qui-Gon's demise.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, no! Yeah. Spoiler alert.
It was a big old whoopsie doodles. I didn't think about that.
You go out and buy the soundtrack.
But at least you didn't get the deleted song, Darth Maul Bites It. You know, that one didn't.
right. Kyle, what about you? Your favorite part?
Oh, my favorite part. The opening crawl. You know, just like, you're just like, all right, we're back. We're doing this.
I mean,
some of those tropes, but in retrospect, you know, I love Qui-Gon Jinn. You know, Liam Neeson's tremendous. I think he brings a gravity to it, a unique perspective on the Force. You know, we got some depth and nuance, the living Force and the shades of that. And he felt like a really interesting, very human entry point into a religious sect, which almost felt very cold. And there's something when you look back at all the Star Wars we've gotten since then, he is a very unique and special Jedi. You know, he had the foresight to, that's why he's not on the council, you know, right. And there's something cooler about a guy who's not on the council.
He's a rebel daddy
who are on the council, you know? And, so it'd be him, you know, every day of the week over a lot of other Jedis. I just think he's a great actor, and they just, you know, he cast it right, you know?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And you got to respect, like, he has a lot of respect for Star Wars. Like, he's been asked many times about coming back. He's like, come on, come on. I'm old. You got the best of me. You just keep bringing me back. It's, you know, waters it down. Like, Mr. Mason.
Yeah. It's not prostitute.
He did come back.
He did come back. Yeah, but not for
after. Well, after Obi-Wan Kenobi, people were asking him, are you going to come back again and do this big thing, like have a bigger role, a more impactful? And he was like, I'm old.
He did do Clone Wars. They did add a dimension to Qui-Gon in the Clone Wars.
Right. Yeah. They did. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Listen, I guess that's enough. Maybe once more is spirit. I would
you're
have
liked ruining,
you
know, the point I was trying to make.
I'll know if you get to the end of Rise of Skywalker, if they just would have had the spine.
We don't speak to about put, that here.
I like that movie. It's fine. If you just would have put the ghosts in the movie.
It's okay. Yeah.
Put the ghosts in the movie. Right. Why couldn't they do that?
Yeah, I know. Like, if thousands of Jedis live in you, Miss Palpatine. Then why do we only see the Skywalker?
And not even all of them. Start with a chorus of voices and then have a couple of the ones that are already in spirit form, the ones that have graduated.
It's not hard. We're waiting for the Kyle Newman remix then.
Yeah, we're waiting for the Newman cut.
I've said before,
they'll probably never let me near anything because I'm too outspoken.
That's too bad, because I've said before, Kyle's a great director. He understands Star Wars.
He is.
I swear to God, I think Kyle could make an amazing Star Wars movie. I wish that would happen, because I think
I've got a trilogy and a standalone that I'm working on. So
good for you.
Excellent.
I will show them to the world one day.
Excellent.
Great. Dan, Kyle, Danny, thank you guys for joining us with our folks here in the chat. Thank you so much for joining us on this show, and little Darth Vader back there. But it has been fantastic. I loved our conversation. Thank you so much. We're going to be looking into pop culture coffee and hopefully
absolutely
tasting it real soon. But what a wonderful venture. I think it's great to be able to kind of combine our fandom with something that we like to drink as adults. We're as they say, we're overworked and underpaid, so coffee keeps us going. Absolutely. But Dan, why don't you tell folks that are still stuck around here where to find you to say hello there?
Well, they can find me on Facebook under Dan Mattson. On Twitter, I'm the Dan Mattson. And on Instagram, I'm Mattson8973. So those are the three platforms that I post to and share both things from the past and things coming up.
Excellent. And Kyle?
I am Kyle_Newman at Twitter, Kyle_Newman on Instagram. I'm on Threads, I think. It's just Kyle Newman, but maybe it's Kyle_Newman.
Oh, Threads.
And then I am also on, you know, Facebook. So Facebook, I have a fan page and always posting stuff, Star Wars, Dungeons & Dragons, whatever, you know, come talk.
Yes, absolutely. And then
and
Danny,
we'll be announcing pop culture coffee stuff soon. Like I said, there's some, if you're a Star Trek fan, Wave 2 is going to make you happy.
Yeah,
and Ninja Turtles. If you like Ninja Turtles, don't miss May, because there's going to be like 10 different products coming.
Well, Mr. Mattson, Mr. Newman, you guys are welcome back to the Scarif Scuttlebutt podcast anytime. If you guys want to talk coffee, nerd stuff, Star Wars or Star Trek, the other white meat, whatever you guys want to talk about.
There are no sides.
Excellent. And Danny, where can people find you?
Oh, well, you can find me on literally any social media platform. Just
you
type in
around,
comics
huh?
and cosplay. Yeah, I do. Like a disease. Hard to get rid of. Easy to find. On any social media platform, especially YouTube, you can please subscribe to Comics and Cosmetics on YouTube. you type comics and cosmetics into any platform and you will find this shining face, or you could type Danny Sansasi if you can spell it. Yeah, and right, you can there. Find me there too. So yes.
Excellent.
More friends, more nerds. Bring me another.
Yes. And just a reminder, Danny and myself, we are part of the Red 5 Network. You can check the rest of the gang at bio.link/red5. Part of the Red 5 Network, theRed5Network.com. For those of you that like typing URLs. But until next time, thank you, everyone. Consider this your second home here at the Scare Scuttlebutt Podcast. Until next time, I'm Ro. That's Danny, Dan, and Kyle. And that is the Scuttlebutt. Woohoo!